Lux Occult is a part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network.
Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble, fillet of a fenny snake, in the cauldron boil and bake, eye of newt and toe of frog, wool of bat and tongue of dog, adder's fork and blind worm's sting, lizard leg and howl its wing, for a charm of powerful trouble, like a hell broth boil and bubble. Double, double, toil and trouble, fire burn and cauldron bubble, cool it with a baboon's blood, then the charm is firm and good. That is, of course, from Shakespeare's Scottish play. Hello and welcome to Lux Occult. This is the podcast where we gleefully taunt the mundane, butcher the Latin and most other languages, and also discuss a variety of occult topics. Exploring the intersections of science, art, magic, philosophy, technology, and so much more through the lens of chaos magic, it's occultism for everyone. I'm your host, Lux Estrada, and if you're hearing the sound of my voice right now, that means that magic and this show are for you, if you want them. There are a lot of different ways to be more free, and using magic or making space for a spiritual practice in your life can be one of them. As always, I don't speak for anybody but myself. Others can, will, and should disagree sometimes. How do we ever learn anything if we all agreed all the time after all? And like people who try to be reasonable attempt to do, or at least should, I am willing and often do revise my opinions based on new evidence. All right, I'm so excited to be bringing you this special Halloween/Samhain episode. I spoke with Britt from the Primordia podcast about her thoughts on the topic of fear, her lifelong obsession with all things spooky, building a psychomantium, Nikola Tesla's ghost radio, and so much more. I also spoke with Flood from XV Planis about his relationship with fear, his paranormal investigations, and making friends with the creeper at Waverly Hills Sanatorium. On this, the second birthday of the Green Mushroom, I can't think of a better way to celebrate than hanging out with some of the fine folks from the spookier side of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network. Speaking of which, don't miss the fun collaboration between Flood, Britt, and the folks over at Unearthing Paranormalcy. Good stuff. I'll be sharing about a spooky dream experience that I had in one of the US's most haunted places later. We'll also be hearing some thoughts from a couple members of the Green Mushroom Project and Administrism's Discord server about working with fear in magical contexts or spooky experiences that can sometimes occur. I will tell you a little bit about the birthday ritual that we had for the Green Mushroom's second birthday on Friday, and there will be some spooky tracks and poetry snacks as well, and a few other assorted tentacles and tidbits. Tentacles and tidbits sounds like an interesting movie. Anyway, before we get into it here, I'd like to say thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with me here on the show. I'm super lucky to have such amazing listeners, collaborators, co-conspirators, and what have you. Y'all are the best, fuck yeah. I've been using social media a lot less lately, which is probably good for my mental health, but that doesn't mean that I don't want to hear from you all and I don't want to interact with you all. I always welcome people's thoughts, questions, comments, suggestions, or arcane revelations, and you can reach me at luxoccultpod@gmail.com, or you can hit me up on Instagram at luxoccultpod. If you like this show and you're into what I'm doing, you can support it on Patreon. If you do so, you can take a bibliomancy break with me, and there are no tiers or levels or whatever, so give as you will. Thank you so much to people who are already doing that. Your support really means a lot, and it makes the show possible, so thank you. I have recently uploaded a special bonus episode that Flood and I recorded together of talking about the concept of entropy and aliens and all kinds of other wild stuff. So yeah, you can check that out on the Lexicult Patreon. So we're going to be talking about fear today. And so to kind of set the table for that, let's hear from Northwestern Medicine about the science of fear, an article entitled Five Things You Never Knew About Fear. Fear is our survival response, says Northwestern Medicine clinical psychologist Zachary Sikora. Some people, roller coaster fans and horror movie buffs, thrive on it, while other people avoid it. Have you ever wondered why? Okay, so fear is physical. Fear is experienced in your mind, but it triggers a strong physical reaction in your body. As soon as you recognize fear, your amygdala, a small organ in the middle of your brain, goes to work. It alerts your nervous system, which sets your body's fear response into motion. Stress hormones like cortisol and adrenaline are released. Your blood pressure and heart rate increase. You start breathing faster. Even your blood flow changes. Blood actually flows away from your heart and into your limbs, making it easier for you to start throwing punches or run for your life. Your body is preparing for full flight or fight. Fear can make you foggy. As some parts of your brain are revving up, others are shutting down. When the amygdala senses fear, the cerebral cortex, the area of the brain that harnesses reasoning and judgment, becomes impaired. So now it's difficult to make good decisions or think clearly. As a result, you might scream and throw your hands up when approached by an actor in a haunted house, unable to rationalize that the threat is not real. Okay, so fear can become pleasure. But why do people who love roller coasters, haunted houses, and horror movies enjoy getting caught up in those fearful, stressful moments? Because the thrill doesn't necessarily end when the ride or movie ends. Through the excitation transfer process, your body and brain remain aroused even after your scary experience is over. During a staged fear experience, your brain will produce more of a chemical called dopamine, which elicits pleasure, says Dr. Sikora. Fear is not phobia. If you're slightly uneasy about swimming in the ocean after watching Jaws, the movie did what it set out to do. But if you find yourself terrorized, traumatized, and unable to function at the mere thought of basking on the beach, you might be experiencing more than just fear. The difference between fear and phobia is simple. Fears are common reactions to events or objects, but a fear becomes a phobia when it interferes with your ability to function and maintain a consistent quality of life. If you start taking extreme measures to avoid water, spiders, or people, you may have a phobia. All right, fear keeps you safe. Fear is a natural and biological condition we all experience, says Dr. Sikora. It's important that we experience fear because it keeps us safe. Fear is a complex human emotion that can be positive and healthy, but can also have negative consequences. If a fear or phobia affects your life in negative or inconvenient ways, speak to your primary care provider who can help determine the kind of treatment you might need. Okay, cool. Thanks a lot to Northwestern Medicine for that. I think that some of this is going to come up in today's conversations, which we will be getting into now. I'll be back later to share some tracks and poetry snacks, updates about the Green Mushroom, and much more. But now I'm super excited to be sharing my chat with Britt from Primordia Podcast. I learned during our conversation that her show is sort of a scion of my show, and Unearthing Paranormalcy and Occult Confessions. Shout out to all the folks over at Unearthing Paranormalcy, and to Rob and Olivia, and all the alchemical actors over at Occult Confessions. Fuck yeah. All right, very fun stuff. Okay, without further ado, let's get into it. Here's my conversation with Britt from Primordia. Well, I am here with Britt, host of the Primordia podcast, which is one of the newer additions to the Green Mushroom Podcast Network. Britt, how's it going?
Good, good. Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate you taking the time. So for folks that haven't checked out your show yet, what can they expect if they go take a listen to it?
Well, they can expect a wide variety of topics that are covered. Anything that I guess I know other people deem like weird, bizarre, or strange, I try to tackle. Things like just released one on the history of ghost hunting equipment, some really old school stuff like Thomas Edison and Tesla's old ghost communication devices, which I didn't know about before. We also talk about like some true crime, but more like on the mysterious side, anything really strange or spooky or bizarre we tried to cover.
Very cool. So how did you first become interested in diving into these topics?
Oh boy. Definitely been a lifelong obsession, I will call it, is like hunting out spooky shit.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And what made you decide to start podcasting about it?
Definitely, I think it was more of a beginning of the pandemic thing of not really having many people to talk to, you know, like we did before this whole thing started. And I've always been like a homebody and an introvert, so I won't say that I've always like been talking to a lot of people. Don't get me wrong. But it's just something that I started listening to podcasts around the same time. I thought it was really interesting. Your podcast actually was one of the first that I started listening to, along with Occult Confessions and Unearthing Paranormalcy.
Hell yeah. Shout out to Occult Confessions and Unearthing Paranormalcy. And thank you for listening to my show too.
Of course. Yeah, yeah. And I really liked all three. I think that you all bring something different to the table. And I've always been like that person in the group that has the weird shit to share with other people. And so I thought maybe I would give podcasting a try for myself.
All right. Fuck yeah. I love it. So you teased a few minutes ago about Tesla's and Edison's ghost hunting equipment. And I cannot not follow up on that because I'm so curious. And don't spoil the whole episode, of course, because people should go and check it out. But can you give us a little taste?
Yeah. So back when this whole like spiritualist craze, I'll call it, started, like in the early 20th century, especially here in America, where people were holding seances, they had like these little closet rooms that they turn into a psychomantium. And one thing that I didn't know was Thomas Edison was toying with the idea of creating an apparatus that could detect spiritual energy when it passed by. So sort of like a really, really, really old school EMF detector or Melmeter or what have you. And unfortunately, he never created the device, and he also mysteriously never left blueprints or prototypes. So we don't know if it was just something he was toying with the idea of, or if it's something that he actually started to build. And then Tesla created a radio device out of a crystal radio and heard some shit that creeped even him out. So I kind of want to hear what he was hearing.
I love that. Yeah. That seems like that could be a fun project to recreate. Do we have plans for that device?
So actually, there are instructables online where you can build your own version of it and hook it up to your computer to make your own little Tesla ghost radio. So yes, that is accessible.
Okay. Yes. Okay, so we've been talking a little bit about, you know, spooky stuff, weird stuff. And one of the things I was hoping we could discuss today is just this concept of fear itself. And like, what is it about these things and about fear and maybe the curiosity that comes along with it that we find so interesting or we find an aversion to or whatever? There's so much there. I'm so curious to hear your thoughts about it.
My thoughts are that there definitely is a lot to unpack with fear. I think it's very interesting. I started to look into, like, you know, everybody probably has these questions of why do we fear the things that we do? Why do we have these deep-seated fears? Do other people share the same ones that we have? And, you know, and then you have the ones that seem outlandish to some people that just are life ruiners for others. So it's definitely very interesting to think about. And I think it's very complex. There's a lot to dive into.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's probably fair to say that like some fears are learned fears and some fears are maybe fears that exist on a more like somatic body animal level, perhaps.
Yes, yes. I definitely agree with that.
And maybe this is like also where we come up with the sort of semantic difference between fear and anxiety too, because I think a lot of the things that I feel anxious about, if I really like intellectually unpack them, they're actually very silly in like a survival sense, you know, like that's not going to affect my survival on an animal level. Like, why am I freaking out about it so deeply? But I guess if you really unpack it far enough along, it's, you know, it is about survival on an animal level in terms of like us being social animals and needing to be part of the group to survive and all of that fun stuff. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was interesting when you start to like get into, and for the most part, you're right. It does like all boil down to your, like the fear of extinction, the fear of being no longer being, no longer being alive or here. And what, there are so many things that we encounter that, especially in today's world, I think that we encounter that could definitely heighten that fear of extinction. So.
Yeah, definitely. I think I heard you mention that there are these kind of like universal fears that they think, like psychologists think that like most animals or people share. Mm-hmm. I know fear of extinction was one of them. I'm trying to remember. Actually, you know what? I don't need to remember. I have the internet. I'm just looking up. All right. So let's see. This is from counseling.org. So this is the five core fears. The fear of abandonment, the loss of identity, the loss of meaning, loss of purpose, fear of death, including the fear of sickness and pain. So that's one version. It looks like there's a lot of different conceptualizations of these universal fears, but it mm-hmm. sounds like they probably hover around a basic kind of like definition.
Yeah, yeah. They pretty much for the most part follow the same threads kind of, so.
So when we're, let's talk a little bit about this idea of like cosmic horror or like sacred horror even. The horror that one might feel like encountering something which is so other, so much bigger maybe, or just different than oneself. I wonder, where do you think we would place that experience on our little universal fear map thingy?
That's a good question. I don't know, because that's definitely a fear that full disclosure, I don't know if I've said this before on my podcast, but for people that listen to yours and don't know me, I have always been absolutely terrified of the thought of encountering an extraterrestrial or being taken by one. That has always been like a huge fear of mine. So to like think about encountering something that is so different from what we see on an everyday basis, I think it just jars our brain initially. Like we have to take a minute to process it. And when our brain can't process it, we just like go to this, I guess, fight or flight response, you know, because it is something that is unknown to us maybe.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm curious about the alien thing. Like, are there people in your life who are experiencers and you've heard stories and that's where you think the fear might come from? Or is it just like, I mean, it's legitimately like a scary thing to think about, I think. But I'm just curious if there's like something that happened or like...
No. So I have always been afraid of like seeing, not... so it's something that I have worked on over the past like 5 or 6 years of coming to terms. Like now I'll go outside and I'm like really trying to see a UFO. But before, like I was afraid to look up at the night sky because I did not want to see things moving. Like if I was on a play set, like a swing set, and I would not look up at the sky when the swing was going up because I felt like I was going to be sucked up into the sky. I really don't know where this fear came from. I've not heard of really anybody other than like one person in my family who's claimed to have seen a UFO, but no one who has had like visitation experiences or anything similar. So I don't know.
Okay, interesting. I love that about getting sucked up into the sky. It reminds me of this interesting movie I watched called Horse Girl. It's Ooh. Kind of along these lines. I would recommend it. It's quite interesting.
I think I've heard about it, but I have not watched it, but now I'm definitely going to.
Very cool. So yeah, I'm thinking about this cosmic horror thing, and I think that part of it for me, it might be this idea of like the loss of identity. how much will we be changed by our encounter with this thing, right? Like, how much will we not be us anymore afterwards? And there's something that's at once very scary about that, but also very like alluring in some ways, like this idea of change and transformation and like discovering this, you know, new configuration or something. So I don't know. I think that there's definitely an interesting relationship that fear has with desire.
Definitely. Definitely. I agree that it's interesting to think about how much it would change us to, and on so many different levels, to encounter something that is just so different. And I get why in a like a mass scenario type of sense that would be maybe not such a good idea, but I do think that it's very possible that these things have happened to so many people. And I don't know, it's what I'm trying to say is I think it's crazy that it's such a plausible idea that it hasn't happened yet. Like, where do we go, or how long is it going to take us to go from this point where we're having this conversation to like a fifth element type of scenario where like we're just all different types of beings are sharing the same space and comfortable sharing the same space? Like, I don't know.
So have you been a fan of the horror genre in the past? Like, is that something that you've kind of sought out, this feeling of fear, this feeling of, you know, engaging with these? Well, I mean, obviously, you're into weird stuff, so this is something that you're into. Is the horror genre part of that for you?
Oh, yes. So I have always had a love for the horror genre, and I love the feeling of being afraid. So that is something that I seek out. I've been going on, like, ghost hunts of my own since I was like a teenager. My friend and I actually tried to start our own little paranormal investigation team, and we actually were called to investigate someone's house. So that was a cool experience. But it's definitely something that I've always been into spooky shit. Growing up, my mom let us watch some things that maybe she shouldn't have, like the Hellraiser movies and Child's Play and like Tales from the Crypt show. So I grew up loving that kind of shit.
Me too. Me too. Hell yeah. Big Clive Barker fan. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
So I'm kind of curious. Do you think that there's been, like, it sounds like you're somebody who has, like, you know, even from a young age, been comfortable, like, engaging with fear. Do you think that this has allowed in other areas of your life for you to engage with, like, other kinds of fear, maybe? Is this something that's translated over into, like, other places in a useful way?
I definitely think so. It challenges me. I like to challenge myself because you know, if you stay the same, that's just kind of boring if you stay in this little bubble. So I think to put yourself out of your comfort zone on a semi-regular or regular basis can be really healthy. And if that means doing something that you're afraid of, absolutely. I'm trying to think of the last thing that I did that terrified me. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but yes, if there's something that normally like off puts me, that yeah, I'll probably try anything once, even if I'm afraid of it.
Hell yeah. No, I love that. And I mean, the idea that, like, you know, just stepping a little bit outside of our comfort zone is like where we grow. So that's, yes. I think that's a cool thing that about the horror genre, I think that maybe gets overlooked perhaps. So yeah, fuck yeah.
Yes, yes. There's only like one part of the horror genre that I can't get behind, to be honest, and that's like the body horror. That one gets to me. That's the only one that like really, really gets to me.
Yeah, some body horror stuff definitely gets to me too. Like, I think for me, a lot of it, like thinking about stuff like lobotomies and stuff like that, like really fucks me up. Like,
ooh, yeah,
probably that loss of identity thing there, right? Like,
exactly. You are no longer you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how much of you has been taken away? And are you aware of that? Like,
raising the question of what even are you? Like, yeah, what is you? Yeah. Which philosophers have been pondering over for aeons. So who knows? But yeah. Okay. So Britt, how would you feel about taking a bibliomancy break?
Let's fucking do it.
All right. All right, here we go. So do you have a D4 and a D8?
Ooh, you know what? I do. Let me grab those.
All right. Okay, so before you roll, do you have a question for the Oracle? You can ask whatever you like.
Okay. Is the... this is going to sound a little obscure, but it also could be plainly obvious for some. Is this cycle that I have been preparing for going to start soon?
Cool question. Go ahead and roll the dice, please.
So I got a 2 and a 6.
House of Leaves by Mark Z. Danielski. Sorry, Mark, I can't say your last name. The cool book, though. Let me go grab it. I will be right back here. All right, I have returned. So, Britt, are you familiar with this book?
I am not.
It's very fun. It's super weird. I don't want to give any spoilers, but it's definitely worth checking out. It's written in a kind of non-conventional way where there's several layers of narrative taking place. Yeah, it's definitely the kind of book that is also a labyrinth in which you can get lost forever if you're not careful. So very fun and spooky. Very fun stuff.
Okay, I'll definitely check it out.
I think this is actually the first time it's been rolled in all of the bibliomancies that I've conducted, if I'm not mistaken. So,
yay!
Yes. All right, Eris. Will the cycle that Brett's been preparing for begin soon? Which is true. Both Karen and Will Navidson survive their ordeal, and they do exchange conjugal vows in Vermont. Of course, it is really possible to look at Nadavidson's ravaged face, the patch covering his left eye, the absence of a hand, the crutch wedged under his armpit, and call it a happy ending? Even putting aside the physical cost, what about the unseen emotional trauma which Muir so casually dismisses? All right, thanks, Eris.
Okay, then.
So definitely sounds like there might be a warning in there about not taking the emotional aspect out of things, perhaps?
Yes. I definitely picked up on that as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of symbolism in that passage as well, so... got some research to do.
All right. Fantastic. Well, thank you, Eris.
Yo, it's the Green Machine. Gonna rock the town without being seen. Have you ever seen a turtle get down? Slamming and jamming to the new swing sound. Yeah.
Hey, what's up? It's me, Luxa from the future. This, of course, is the iconic ninja rap from Vanilla Ice, featured in the movie Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, The Secret of the Ooze. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. I know I enjoyed these conversations. We're going to be returning to my chat with Britt in just a little while here to talk about our own fears and much more, and I will share one of my own spooky experiences too at some point here. We're also going to be hopping into our episode within the episode featuring Flood in just a few moments. But before we get to that, since we're talking about cosmic horror and have just gotten done with the bibliomancy break, I thought it would be fun to mention a sort of mythical book which is synonymous with this concept in some ways. And I'm of course talking about the Necronomicon from H.P. Lovecraft's Cthulhu mythos. One thing that comes up in discussions about the author a lot is how much of a sort of like gross, hateful little dude he was. He was just sort of like xenophobic in like a very deep and intense way, as far as I understand it. And people often wonder if it was like this kind of like fundamental fear and uncomfortableness which like gave him the ability to portray these stories of like just being deeply creeped out by something that's like so different or whatever. And that maybe even like could change you from coming into contact with or corrupt or despoil you or drive you insane or whatever. I suppose it's not unlike the concept of an information hazard. Anyway, let's see what Wikipedia has to say about the Necronomicon. So the Necronomicon, also referred to as the Book of the Dead, or under purported original Arabic title Kitab al-Azif, is a fictional grimoire, textbook of magic, appearing in stories by the horror writer H.P. Lovecraft and his followers. It was first mentioned in Lovecraft's 1924 short story The Hound, written in 1922, though it's purported the author, the mad Arab Abdul Al-Zaharid had been quoted a year earlier in Lovecraft's The Nameless City. Among other things, the work contains an account of the Old Ones, their history, and the means for summoning them. Other authors, such as August Derleth, Clark Ashton Smith, also cited the Necronomicon in their work. Lovecraft approved of the writers building on his work, believing such common allusions built up a background of evil verisimilitude. I love that. A background of evil verisimilitude. It is in quotes. That's good, Lovecraft. Thank you. All right. Many readers have believed it to be a real work, which booksellers and librarians receiving many requests for it. Pranksters have listed it in rare book catalogs, and a student smuggled a card for it onto the card catalog of the Yale University Library. Capitalizing on the notoriety of the fictional volume, real-life publishers have printed many books entitled The Necronomicon since Lovecraft's death. Okay, so thank you, Wikipedia. One author that did make a book about summoning the Old Ones but did not call it the Necronomicon is Phil Hine. He did briefly write about it in his book using the Cthulhu mythos for his purposes, the Pseudonomicon. So let's hear a little tidbit from that. The whole point of the Necronomicon is that it's a cipher for the kind of experience which twists your whole worldview, and whilst the insights of that illumination are dancing around your head, impels you to act upon it, to do what must be done in the fire of Gnosis, whether it be Dr. Henry Armitage setting forth to Dunwich or Saul's conversion of the Greeks, the flames of his vision on the road to Damascus dancing in his heart. This experience, this core, out of which magus, power, bursts forth, for me is the core of magic, the central mystery, if you like. Okay, so fuck yeah. Thank you, Phil Hine. Very cool. We're going to hear a little bit more from that book a little bit later on after the interviews. Shout out to Allie Words, who has just released a new book, Vavik, A Magical Constructed Language. This is Buto Technomancy. I'm going to read a little bit from the description here. Vavik is a magical polysynthetic logosyllabic language that can be spoken through all forms of activity. Its grammar was covertly explored in Flower Mist, a meta-dialectical RPG. Vavik can be spoken through all forms of action. This book includes a written script for Vavik. It also includes a posture for every symbol, so you can speak Vavik through dance. And there's a method for speaking Vavik through musical composition, both in Western and microtonal tunings. There are guidelines for spatially spelling Vavik words using interior design, costume, altars, and so on. And there are also guides to constructing smell and taste based on modes of speech, and for the use of things like Kabbalah, Tarot, runes, and the I Ching as roots within Vavik. All right, so very cool stuff. Check out my conversation with Ali in episode 46 of this show entitled The Semiotician in the Machine to hear more about some of the very fun and interesting technomancy projects they've made. And you can hear me chat about the Green Mushroom Project, my process for creating ritually produced aural erotica, and much more in episode 4 of Ali's show, The Last Unrifled Yaw, available on YouTube. So I'm going to play a remix I made of a track that Ali produced using AI. I also shared this one during the episode I mentioned just now, but I'm going to play it again here because I think it's definitely thematically appropriate. On the other side of that, we're going to be rolling into my conversation with Flood from XV Planis about his relationship with fear, his work as a paranormal investigator, and much more. But now, here is my remix of Ali Word's Single Rose.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here with Flood, host of the XV Planets podcast. How's it going, dude?
It's going well. How are you, my friend?
Good. I'm stoked that you're finally here. We've been talking about doing this forever, and I think that both of us have a lot of like gyroscopes that we're always juggling, so it's cool that this is finally occurring.
We are professional jugglers at this point, I think.
So fuck yeah. So for people who haven't heard XV Planets, can you tell us a little bit about what we might expect?
Yeah, sure. So XV Planets, it's a podcast on the strange and unexplained paranormal side of things. And it was actually never really meant to be a podcast. It was more of kind of like an audio journal of a journey that I'm on. And over the course of the last 2 years, it has developed from a conversation into a massive family of paranormal investigators. And the show is kind of a documentation of our journey. We definitely take some detours and we talk about art, science, philosophy, and a whole bunch of other stuff whenever we need a break. But the heart and soul of it really is firsthand accounts of paranormal investigations and the experiences that I and my team have.
Yeah, fuck yeah. And I had a great time speaking with you and Alejandro about chaos magic, so people can go check that out if they're interested.
Absolutely. That was a blast to have you, and we hope to have you back on again here pretty soon.
I would love that. Fuck yeah. Okay, so we're talking a lot about fear today in our conversation, and I'm wondering, what do you feel your relationship is with it, and how does that relate to your paranormal investigations? You've also been a guest on the Smuts Up podcast, another Green Mushroom Podcast Network show, to talk about some of your other interests, and I'm wondering, you know, how all of that comes together for you.
Okay, loaded one, but all right. Well, we'll save the funny kinky stuff for the latter half of this conversation, but as far as fear playing out in the paranormal investigation, since I never went into this like pursuing fear or pursuing that level of intensity, my interest in it really started to. So like a couple of years ago, I started to mess around with different forms of magic and ritual and things like that. And upon toying with some of those concepts, it just opened up a whole bag of worms or a whole can of worms that link back to my past. So I had a whole lot of paranormal experiences when I was younger, but I didn't really identify them or understand them until I came back to it in my later years. Now, as far as the fear aspect goes, I am looking to push boundaries. I'm always trying to go a little bit further, to do things a little bit different. I love that you're bringing this up because I just got done with a conversation not even like 8 hours ago with a friend of mine. And the long and short of it is I don't get scared easily. I do love the adrenaline and the sense of fear when it kicks in. You know, it's I will always love The Shining because that is the movie that scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. But experiencing things firsthand is a whole other level of fear. And I've been doing this for a while now, and I've had some really, really odd experiences. But the events that happened to me at Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky, have completely changed me for the rest of my life. That hit a whole new level of fear and terror and not understanding what in the hell reality is anymore. So it took a few long weekends for me to grasp what I went through at that place. But now that I have kind of anchored myself and understood the series of events that unfolded at Waverly Hills, like now I'm itching to go back and trigger this thing again. I want to go back and I want to, because now I'm no longer afraid because I have a deeper understanding of it. But fear definitely does play into the whole paranormal investigation thing. I'm not pursuing it, but I'm using it as kind of like a barometer. So if I am starting to get the sensation of fear or something along those lines, I push myself to go further because that means if I am experiencing that sensation, that means that I am probably about to experience something that I've never experienced before. So I move towards it as opposed to pulling back, you know?
Okay, very cool. So I'm guessing there's probably like a balancing act here, right? Like in terms of when is it smart to walk away and when is it smart to walk forward?
Yeah, I wish there was, but at this point, like, I have a complete and total disregard for personal safety. So if
okay. So we'll take your advice with some salt.
Oh, yeah. by all means, take into account my experiences. Do not try to repeat them. I am the first to admit this. Like, it's not for the faint of heart. I've cracked into something here that could be potentially harmful and damaging to a lot of people. So feel free to listen. Please don't try to do what I'm doing.
Don't try it at home.
Yeah. Don't try this at home, kids. It's a bad idea. You're going to have a bad time. You're
going to have a bad time.
But, you know, it really doesn't, like, it pushes me. And, you know, again, total disregard for personal safety. When I'm starting to push those thresholds instead of taking a step back, I have a tendency to take a few steps forward. This is... shown me a lot of things. I have, I guess there's a certain level of enlightenment, and I've had a lot of experiences that I don't think a whole lot of paranormal investigators have had. And yeah, so fear does drive me. It no longer keeps me at bay, or at least with this. Now, I'm terrified of pumpkin spice. So,
well, it does seem to have a sinister amount of control in our culture. So has there been a time when you've regretted pushing these boundaries? Has there ever been anything in your work where you're like, oh, fuck, I went too far. I should not have done that.
Oh, yeah, many times. Or at least I will have those moments of literally saying that to myself in my own head. But I still look at it all as a learning experience. And again, to go back to Waverly Hills, I went there for one reason in particular, and that was to try to track down and interact with this entity that is known throughout the Waverly Hills history as the Creeper, in quotation marks.
Sounds lovely.
It's not. It is absolutely horrifying. And I got exactly what I asked for. Whenever I had the first interaction with it, it was actually enough that I pulled a full-on Scooby-Doo. I immediately turned tail, ran, like I had the whole cartoon running leg wind-up. And then I went straight back to the team headquarters. I'm like, I got what I asked for, and I'm really regretting it. I am really regretting it. For a little bit of context here, the Creeper is this entity at Waverly Hills that has been reported ever since the 1960s. It's just around. And these are entities that not only are present at Waverly, you will find them in other places, like other sanatoriums, other mental institutions, nursing homes. I had a friend of mine refer to them as death eaters. They seem to be drawn and attracted to people who are suffering or might be hurting. And this plays into a way larger story here in a little bit. The Creeper entity has been well documented. This is the whole reason that I went, and I got what I asked for. Now, what was crazy about it is after the first interaction I had with it, this thing followed me around for the rest of the night. And the only way that I can describe what it's not a shadow entity, because I actually had moments where I could see the moonlight coming in and actually I could see flesh. It looked like flesh and bone, but it still was very unnatural. And this thing followed me around for the rest of the night, like a lost puppy dog. Matter of fact, the last encounter that we had was around 3:30 in the morning when I was on all fours staring at its face, and it was about 30 feet away from me, mimicking every move.
Maybe it liked you.
Well, no, I think you're right. But I'm the first to admit that this first interaction was absolutely horrifying. I have never seen any, like, I have seen some shit, my friend. I have been on a whole lot of paranormal investigations, but this is one of those that, like, completely rocked my world and made me challenge my understanding of reality and the layers within. But this entity, like, followed me around like a lost puppy dog for the rest of the night. And initially, I was absolutely horrified when I saw it, because this is something that is unnatural. I shouldn't have seen this. I was meant to see this, but human beings in general are not meant to see these things. And throughout the course of the evening, we actually developed, I guess you would say, a bit of a connection. And so while I was terrified when I first saw it, by the end of the night, all of that fear went away. the way this thing looked at me, like I would see it sticking its head out from doorways, and I would just make out the outline of its head and its shoulders, and it would cock its head like a neighborhood dog. Mm-hmm. It was like, hey, do I know you? You know? And that's how I felt by the end of the evening. So as much as the fear made me immediately turn tail and run during our first encounter, the more it showed up throughout the rest of the evening, I think we developed this genuine connection of curiosity towards one another, because I do feel connected to this thing that is not of this plane of existence, and it felt connected to me. And I think I understand why, but I'm not 100% sure. But what I will say is, I'm really glad I get to say this. I get to say this publicly for the first time. I completed radiation treatment.
Congratulations. That's awesome, dude.
I did not beat cancer, but I can tell you that it is definitely on its way out, and things are getting better.
Bye. That's
but
awesome.
Here's the thing. I would not have found out about it unless this experience happened.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So this thing helped you.
Yes, exactly. And it also kind of points towards why it might have been attracted to me, is because had I gone a few weeks further, things could have gotten way worse. Mm. So I think this thing might have known, or it might have been aware that I was ill, and it was following me because of that. Yeah, there's a whole, that's a whole paranormal onion that would take, like, it's going to take me years to unpack alone, and it's also part of the reason that I'm kicking around the idea of going to Louisville, just so that I can live next to Waverly.
I mean, that's where your friend is.
Yeah, well, it also followed me home.
That's right. You did say that you had something follow you home. Okay, so it was this guy, or thing. I don't know if guy's the right term for something like this, but yeah.
At least a part of it, yeah. Something from Waverly definitely came home with me. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. Like a lot of our community messes around with different aspects of occultism on varying levels. And we've all done the research about what it's like to summon, bind, and bring things in and stuff like that. There's something to that. I actually enjoy being followed. Like, I love it when things come home with me. And it does, it, you know what? It scares the hell out of me. It really, really does. All of this stuff scares the absolute ever-loving hell out of me. But I wouldn't trade a minute of it for anything, because the fear, you know, going back to the root of the conversation, the fear is what's driving me to pursue this further, because I don't want to be afraid of it. I want to move past it, and I don't think there's a reason to be afraid of it. The fear comes from a trigger of not having these experiences. So let's challenge it. Let's confront it. Let's communicate with it. And maybe it won't be as scary moving forward, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of thinking about what you've said about this entity and everything, something comes to my mind, which is, you know, the fact that once you became more familiar with it, it wasn't as scary anymore. So we could sort of parse that out to say that a lot of the fear you were experiencing before was just fear of the unknown. And exactly. So, like, there's this idea of, you know, I've been doing some work with, like, the concept of the void and this idea of, like, embracing fear and embracing not knowing, mm-hmm. embracing, like, the darkness of oblivion or whatever, like, you know, of just not knowing. And, yeah, I think that what you're saying is very much involved in that.
We're all toying around with things that don't really have a whole lot of data and research on, and all of that's going to get scary eventually. And let's take it out of occultism for a minute. Let's talk about the science of understanding our universe and the absurd things that exist beyond our galaxy and the concept of black holes. Like, did you hear the audio from the black hole?
No, but I've been, we should talk about this after the recording, because I want to ask more questions about okay. it. But yeah, because right. this has actually been coming up for me in adjacent ways in my work, but I don't want to, like, go off on a big weird tangent about stuff that I'm, like, actively doing anyway. So yeah.
Fair enough. Well, the reason I bring that up is, so, you know, black holes just in a theoretical sense are terrifying, because they are this incredibly powerful force of nature, that universal nature, that can swallow planets and swallow stars and things like that.
Well, it's thought that our entire galaxy has like a massive black hole in the center of it, and that's like why it swirls around, right?
Yeah, the vast majority of galaxies do.
Yeah, so that's interesting right stuff. I don't know. Yeah.
The sound of a black hole, which actually you can't hear, but it's like a digital reconstruction of it. And it exists somewhere like 50 octaves below C, like on a frequency that we can't possibly listen to. But if you listen to it, anybody who has had a paranormal experience or, hell, even a psychedelic psychonaut experience, that sound is going to feel really familiar.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay, very, very interesting. I've been obsessed with like things like entropy and dark matter and dark energy and stuff for like a really long time. And so, yeah, this is definitely sort of bringing that obsession to the forefront for me.
I seriously wish you were recording video right now, because as soon as you started to say that, I was over here shaking my fist. Like, yes!
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll talk more about this. Hell yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah, so like, I mean, fear definitely does play a part in my work and my research and, you know, some of the places that I strive to go towards to experience things. And I think somewhere at the heart, in the heart of all this is I am trying to break fear. I am trying to get to a point where nothing rattles me ever again, because I want to be able to be there in the moment and not have that instant human response of, holy crap, I don't know what this is. I need to get out. No, I want to be able to stand there looking into the void and saying, let's go take a couple of more steps toward it. You know?
Hello, void.
Yeah. Oh God, that's so good. Oh wow. Oh, I'm wondering if anybody else actually got that joke. Hello, void. I think you just came up with a great t-shirt design. Seriously,
I would wear that t-shirt. Absolutely. Okay,
we'll do a limited.
That will be the first Lux Occult t-shirt. It just will say "Hello, void," and it'll say the Lux Occult podcast in the background. If you're into that and you'd wear it, let me know and what's up, and I will see if I can make that happen.
Take my money now. I want the first run. Seriously.
All right. All right. Beautiful. People can write to me at luxocultpod@gmail.com or get me at luxocultpod on Instagram.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Now, as far as the other side of things, you asked me on how this played into more personal relationships, and I feel comfortable sharing this here. I do not talk about this stuff on my own podcast, but hi, I am a kinky. I am really into weird shit.
Welcome to the pervert club.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And this is definitely something that I keep off of my feed because I want it to be very, very focused on the paranormal, which is why I love coming and hang out with you guys on Smuts Up and some of the devolving conversations that happen on Discord.
Our green mushroom chats are never full of devolving conversations. I have no idea to what you are referring.
It always devolves to dick jokes, but even those dick jokes, you know, have a sense of philosophy and intelligence.
Honestly,
them.
Flood, it usually evolves into dick jokes. You usually join us late and like we usually talk about all kinds of really cool philosophy stuff, and then you show up and it's just dick jokes till the end of the night. So
is it just me?
Is that like, more? No, I'm totally joking. It's all your fault.
Is everybody just like holding that button until I show up and like, oh hey, that guy's here. Let's let it rip.
No, we always have such a good time chatting. And shout out to everybody who likes to come hang out on Fungal Friday. Fuck yeah.
Absolutely. I love popping in for those. I wish I could spend more time on it, but usually Fridays I am in the thick of investigation, so I usually only get to pop on for the midnight moment, but
the midnight moment.
As far as that, how this plays into me on a more sensual or sexual side is I really love edge play. I love intense physical experiences, and I love intense psychological experiences if it's done within a safety framework that you know, you can trust your partner. So I guess I am a little bit of a fear slut in all aspects of my life.
Do you think that exploring, you know, like playing with fear, fear play or whatever in kink, has that made your investigation work maybe like easier for you, or has it like helped you sort of in that way?
I think they're completely separate because they are two completely different forms of intense fear. Whereas, you know, like if we're talking about BDSM stuff, then you're talking about negotiations, a lot of conversations before you even try to trigger some of this stuff and you know, have these experiences. Whereas the paranormal side, I am like, we're all walking blind into this because mm-hmm. there is no science for us to follow on this, because unfortunately, parapsychology is no longer respected in academic circles. I'm hoping we're going to see a change in that here in the next few years, though.
Yeah, that's a very good distinction and an important one for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So like having intense moments of, you know, intense physical moments of sensation, things like that. And actually, it's so funny that we went into this because I just watched the new Hellraiser. This is hilarious. Yeah. But the, you know, the fear that you experience through the kink scene is often negotiated. It is planned. You know exactly how it's going to go down. And this is what allows you to develop that catharsis and really sink into the moment and let yourself experience that, because you know you're safe. Everything's going to be fine. And you can stop it at any time you want. When it comes to the paranormal side, you can try as much as you want. But if something starts following you, you can't turn that off. It is going to follow you. And that actually is very scary, because you lose control there. You have no way to turn this shit off. It is going to haunt you. And that is not a pun. It is going to haunt you. It is going to follow you. And it will potentially screw you up if you're not careful.
And are you talking about entities following you, or are you talking about just the, like, having the knowledge of having this experience?
All of it.
Okay, cool.
All of it. Seriously, I have, on investigations, I have seen things that have truly rattled me to my core and have forever changed me. I'm never going to be the same after some of this stuff. And the last year in particular, I have had so many major experiences that, Luxon, I'm actually surprised that I still can maintain some form of sanity. A lot of this stuff would have driven most people mad.
I feel the same way sometimes. I get it.
Yeah.
Totally. And I mean, I don't know, whatever. My therapist says I'm okay, so I must not be too crazy. It's fine.
My therapist dropped me.
Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I got to find a new one, because I brought up the whole experience at Waverly, and by the time I was done, actually it ended with her telling me, I've had weird stuff happening to me ever since you started talking about this, and I'm sorry I can't take you on.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That sucks. Fuck.
No. Yeah. So this stuff doesn't just stick to you. It will affect everyone in your circle. It happens.
Okay. And there's, you know, as magicians, there's thoughts about, you know, different protocols that can be enacted and stuff like that. I mean, whether or not they'll be effective or whatever, like, do you have any kind of practice about like banishing and cleansing the space and like kind of, you know, just as a sort of like general thing?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I have several different rituals that I run through anytime that I'm going on investigations, both before and after. But okay, so here's the idiot in me. Okay. I openly invite, like, if you want to come and hang out with me, if you want to follow me home, you can come home with me.
God, what a slut. Sorry.
Look, I'm lonely. You know?
I'm just kidding. No, I'm totally joking.
Right.
Also, there's nothing fucking wrong with being a slut either. I'm just, sorry.
No. You're totally right, though. I am a spook slut, hands down. But the thing is, it's like, I know that I am putting myself in danger by doing that, but at the same time, I don't want the experiences to end. I want them to keep going. I want to see how far this is going to go. Now, I do take steps, obviously, to protect myself, take care of myself. Like, hell, my entire house is sealed. Every opening is like drenched in oil of abramelin. I've got black tourmaline on every corner in every windowsill. I've got more sigils on my front door and my windows than you can possibly imagine. So I do take precautions. But at the same time, I am keeping myself open. Like, I really want to bust this wide open. Let's see how far into the void I can go before it kills me, you know?
Sure. I mean, we're going to die anyway, so...
Hey, find what you love and let it kill you, right?
All right, well, fuck yeah. So do you have any questions for me before I let you go?
No, I'm just hoping. Recently, there's been a whole lot of crossover opportunities from the Green Mushroom Podcast Network, and I'm hoping we can just continue this conversation on and different platforms and have more fun, because I love hanging out with you guys, and everybody on that network has so much to offer in so many ways. It's just beautiful. Thank you for letting me be a part of it.
Oh, absolutely. We're super stoked to have you. Excited for Britt's experiment that we're going to be doing, I think,
right?
Next week. That's going to be cool.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be a blast. I'm glad I actually had that evening off, even though I should be going to rehearsal for a Rocky Horror performance. By the way, I look great in fishnets, just saying.
I bet. Send us some pictures.
Well, that'll have to be on a different feed. I gotta, our podcast got to stay PG these days.
Okay, but, actually, on the Green Mushroom Discord server, we do have a channel called Looks and Glamour where you can post pictures of yourself in fishnets if you want to.
Oh, cool. So if anybody wants to see me in my best Tim Curry impersonation.
So here for it, dude. Fuck
really,
yeah.
Really, I do a great riffraff. I'm way better at that. But I definitely have the voice of Tim Curry. How do you do, I? See, you've met my faithful handyman.
Very good. Hell yeah.
Well, I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania.
Fuck yeah.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Luxa. I really appreciate it. It's always a blast to hang out with you. And you're always so warm and welcoming. And any time that we have connected on any show or any network, I completely forget that we're actually trying to do a podcast, because it's just like hanging out with a friend. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, dude. I appreciate it. And I appreciate how everything came together. It's been a weird journey for me too. It sounds like there's a lot of parallels in terms of like how we started podcasting and all kinds of stuff like that. So yeah, fuck yeah. Magic is a thing. It makes stuff happen and shit like this results. So that's fucking cool.
Magic is real, bitches.
That's right. Magic is real, bitches. All right. I think we'll cut it there. All right, fuck yeah. Thanks to Casanica for the use of the track, which is Be Like. And thanks so much to Flood for joining me. Don't forget to check out XV Planis for all kinds of spooky and interesting fun. Members of the Luxacult Patreon can hear the impromptu conversation that Flood and I had about dark energy, entropy, aliens, time travelers, and much more. I made a video of that which features some AI-generated art, which was created using the prompt Sacred Dark Energy. It's kind of cool. So this is a sort of fun little video that I wanted to make to say thank you so much for your support. I really appreciate it. Okay, so as I probably say too often, we can't really choose the hands that we're dealt, only how we play. And we've been talking a lot about fear today, and I just wanted to point out how inspiring it's been to have seen like the way that Flood has fought with fierce courage against the very challenging health stuff he's had going on. And you can really tell that the passion for what he does has been a huge part of that. And so yeah, fuck yeah, I really respect it. Fuck yeah. All right, so before we go any further in this episode about fear, fret not to those of you who were worried that I might not say this thing. I will definitely say it. And it is this, from Frank Herbert's Dune series, the Bene Gesserit Litany Against Fear. I must not fear. Fear is the mind killer. Fear is a little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And where it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain. All right, fuck yeah. I will be back a little bit later to say what's up and share a poetry snack. But let's get back into my conversation with Britt from Primordia.
So I've got a couple questions. So what would you say your worst fear is? We'll start with that one.
I've thought a lot about this. I think that it probably does come down to like, the regular abandonment thing, like on some level, the idea of maybe just isolation, being socially isolated, which is funny because I'm like a very introverted person like you that likes to spend lots of time by myself. But there's still, I think, you know, as a social animal, there's like always that kind of that fear there. I guess that's why solitary confinement is like one of the worst punishments you can give to somebody. So I guess that totally tracks and makes sense. Oof. Yeah, I think that I also have some kind of more existential fears surrounding, like, to what extent am I, like, not acting ethically? Like, where is the most ethical path and stuff? And, like, what does that mean? And, like, trying to untangle those kinds of webs. I think there might also be a little bit of, like, existential fear surrounding that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good question.
Those are good answers. Is there a fear or would the fear, and you're right, there is, like, it's always good, especially as an introverted person, of course it's great being alone, but being lonely sucks.
Yeah, totally.
So it's nice to have the option to be social, and to have that no longer be an option is, yes, very dreadful to think about, because we are social creatures whether we like to be or not.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess in a sense, even introverts have to charge that battery at some point or in some way.
Yeah. And just conceptually, like, knowing that there's people out there that you could hang with if you wanted to is like, there's just, I think, a little bit of that can sometimes even be enough. Like, you don't necessarily even have to do it. Just knowing that it's a possibility can be enough comfort. Like, so, yes, yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. You get the, like, the vicarious trickle from knowing that there's just shit happening out there that you, yeah, could be a part of.
That maybe that's like part of what hope is, right? It's sort of like this like bootstrapping thing where you're not sure about it, but you assume or you hope or whatever that it's there, that there's not necessarily evidence yet. I'm not sure. I've been thinking about this and to what extent it's a useful tool and to what extent it's a non-useful tool for self-delusion in a negative way. I don't know. Because like anything, it's a double-edged sword. But yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, you've got to walk the fine line in the middle so you don't teeter too much one way or the other. Is there a fear that you had, like, as a kid that has, I hope this is going to come out right, that has, like, affected your daily habits today? Even if you no longer, like, have the fear, does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't done that much introspection on that particular point in terms of, like, you know, maybe my mannerisms or stuff like that. But I do think that it's possible that, you know, the abandonment thing that I mentioned might have, you know, be something that has perpetuated in my patterns of behavior and stuff, even to this, you know, day. Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. I did used to, when I was a kid, I used to have this sort of like existential fear of, I think it was actually like sort of environmental dread, actually. Like it was stuff about like toxic waste, you know, radioactive waste in particular. Probably got that idea from watching the Ninja Turtles, who got mutated by this glowing green shit, right? So that's probably where that came from. I was a big Ninja Turtles fan, so that was definitely on my mind a lot. But yeah, and I at once feared like this, like the ooze, right? But I also like, I weirdly like wanted to be in contact with the ooze and be transformed into a mutant like the turtles or something. So yeah, there's this interesting sort of relationship there, I think, for me, even like as a kid. So yeah.
Yeah, they at least in the old movie that I'm remembering with the ooze, they do make that shit a little alluring. So
yeah, are you referring to the second movie, The Secret of the Ooze, which in my opinion is the best one?
Yes, I am.
Okay, fantastic. I know I'm dating myself and I do not care. Worth it.
That is a great movie. And now I want to watch that shit again. It's been too long.
Yeah, there's a lot of good things about it. It does have MC Hammer in it, if I'm not mistaken, like singing this rap about ninjas.
Oh.
Which is, I think it's MC Hammer. Again, I have the internet. I can look this up. I haven't watched this movie in quite a while, so it's possible that it like hasn't aged well, perhaps. I don't know, but I remember enjoying it as a kid.
And you know, don't you hate when that happens, when like you talk up a movie that was the shit when you were little and you make somebody watch it when you're an adult and it does not meet your, or it doesn't meet their expectations. I mean, you still have the childhood nostalgia going on. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great point about like perception and stuff too. Okay, so I misspoke. It's not MC Hammer. It's Vanilla Ice singing a song called The Ninja Rap or Go Ninja Go, it looks like. Because I think that was the main crux of the song, is like, Go Ninja Go Ninja Go. Really good stuff.
Great stuff. There were some great movies that came out around that time. Whenever, what year was that? 1991. Okay. I wouldn't know. I wasn't around in 1991 yet, but.
Yeah, wow. That was a long time ago. I must have been in like first grade, I think. So, yeah.
Nice, nice. You know, another great movie of that time, totally off the topic of fears, but, or not really. I mean, for the people that have like a fear of dolls and moving dolls, Small Soldiers. You probably thought I was going a different direction with that, but Small Soldiers is a great movie.
Okay. Now, I don't think I've seen that one.
Oh, I definitely recommend it, and hopefully this is not one of those that doesn't meet your expectations. But Small Soldiers, I definitely recommend checking it out. It's fantastic.
Okay, so this looks like it's about haunted action figures?
Kind of, yes. They're like very embodied fun. By the spirits of the action figures that they're supposed to be. So you have like the militarized ones, and then you have the ones that are Gorgons from different, or Gorgonites, I can't remember, from a different planet. And they're just trying to make it home. So, yeah. Wholesome.
All right.
Talking, violent Barbies, you know, all the great stuff.
Sounds very fun. So how about you? Like, you mentioned the fear of UFOs and stuff. Is there another fear that you've had from childhood that you think has you've carried with you and still have habits about?
I definitely still have weird habits surrounding the whole alien thing. Now, some of these habits I do think stemmed from watching Fire in the Sky as a youngster.
You know, my mother took me to that in the theaters thinking that it was going to be like a fun movie for kids.
Oh, no.
My brother and I were quite traumatized by it. Yes.
Oh no, that's terrible.
It's kind of funny, but it was also very scary.
Especially going into it expecting something totally different. Oh wow.
It's gonna be fun aliens.
No, terrifying. Oh my gosh. Yeah, but especially just to think about, he's so traumatized that table syrup, like in that one scene, dripping off the table or whatever it was dripping off the table, like set him back. I don't know, but so when I was little, and I still do it, I have this habit of like covering my ears with my arm or my hair because I don't want my ears to be probed.
Okay, interesting.
Just a sleep thing. That stems from that, like not wanting to be in contact or taken by things.
Well, if you cover your ears while you sleep, there's less of a chance that spiders will crawl into them, right?
You're right. They'll just go into your gaping open mouth.
Or your nose. Don't worry about it. There might be a spider in your nose while you're asleep. It's fine.
Maybe they'll clean up some of the boogies while they're in there. Do you like to have some healthy scares every once in a while? What are some scary things that you like to do?
Well, I do like to play with the concept of fear in my magical practice. It's something that I've been exploring a lot recently. I think in a sort of like esoteric sense, where I'm at with it right now is like the idea of embracing unknowingness. I'm so like, I tend to be like such a cerebral person. Like I'm very much into like trying to understand things on their first principles and formulas and categories and all that shit. Like that's cool. Those are all cool maps for understanding things and like organizing information, but it's not the same as like the wholeness of a thing. It's, you know, there's difference between a map and a territory. And in order to like experience the actual territory, sometimes you have to leave the maps at home and not look at them, because if you're looking at them, you're not looking at what's around you. But like, in order to do that, there's a lot of need to embrace not knowing. There's a need to relinquish the illusion of control that I like to cling to. mm-hmm. for safety.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's this sort of idea of, we've discussed it, some folks and I who have been talking about the idea of, like, you know, instead of pursuing enlightenment, the idea of endarkenment, the idea of, like, fully embracing the mystery itself. So yeah, that's sort of where I'm playing in terms of fear on a sort of conceptual level. In terms of practice and stuff, like, I do like to pursue, like you said, pursue things that bring me out of my comfort zone and stuff, but also pursue things which I think might embody this sort of, like, cosmic or sacred horror, or, like, trying to sort of reach for that, I don't know, like, brushing up with something that is untouchable, maybe. I don't know. Language falls short of these ideas, obviously. But yeah, for, like, on a practical level, like, I do, you know, like, things involving, like, you know, playing with fear in, yeah, a variety of different contexts.
Definitely. And I think you brought up some points that hit with me in what you said, too, about, I can't remember what book I was reading, but it brought up the idea of, you know, you're not supposed to know, in a very basic way, this is a very crude way of saying it, but you're not supposed to know everything. There is supposed to be a level of mystery to creation, or whatever you call it. There is supposed to be some mystery to being. So I guess it's not all suffering.
It's not all suffering, guys. It's also not knowing anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right? It gets even better. Don't worry. But the book, I can't remember what it was now, and it kills me, but it brought up the idea of not asking why. Like, there is supposed to be no why or because. And I don't know if that makes sense to you.
The idea of allowing oneself to diverge away from causality.
Mm-hmm. You bring up a good point, too, about, like, in your magical practice, doing things that kind of, I'm not going to choose the right term here, but again, what you said about language, it's failing me today. But, like, evoking or poking at your shadow self a little bit, like, acknowledging those things in your practice that you normally would shy away from, but deep down, you know, a part of you knows that that's an essential part to, like, your breakthrough, or I don't know, but there is unknowing as well that is just there in the void, and you're just supposed to be okay sometimes with just being in that void.
Yeah, the not knowing is sort of a type of knowing itself. So yeah, that's really cool. And I liked what you brought up about, like, this idea of incompleteness, I think is how I would say it. Even in something like a system of mathematics and logic and stuff was set forth in Principia Mathematica by Russell and Whitehead. They basically were like, there's too many, like, problems with math. There's all this, like, self-reference shit. We got to clean it up. We're going to make this, like, super dope system that's, like, super airtight. And they did. It's, like, very dope and everybody loved it. But then this dude, Kurt Gödel, came along and he's like, but wait, if you wrote this thing, the whole thing sort of references itself. Like, he pointed out that even within this very robust system, there was still an element of incompleteness because it could become self-referential. And it sort of demonstrated that it might be a sort of, like, logical fallacy to assume that there can be a complete set of knowledge. So yeah, really interesting shit.
That is. And it probably stuff like that probably does throw off. It does throw off very, like, analytical people. When you try to pick apart everything on a daily basis and overanalyze to not come up with the solution to, or the sum of the problem, then you tend to automatically try to just, like, freak out a little bit. Well, what can I do to solve it? What can I do to figure this out? Like, there has to be a something to this. But, you know, sometimes there's not.
Yeah. Hey, what's up? It's me, Luxa, from the future. I hope you're enjoying the episode. I wanted to pop in here and share a little bit of a poetry snack, because it's definitely right on topic for what we are talking about. And this is something that I wrote having to do with my work with the void and this idea of endarkenment and what that kind of means in terms of like embracing the unknown and the beyond what can be known, perhaps. I don't know. Hard to explain, of course. All right, so I wrote this for a friend of mine, and they know who they are, so I'm not going to say it, but yes, this is Full Moon in Capricorn. Through the void, our thoughts first touched, and she whispered to you the name of my birth. Now I wonder, will you discover all of the other secret syllables by which I am called? Would pulling this thread unravel the mystery that shapes me? Could the treasures of the heart be taken apart until we understand what we see? But the knowledge of such a disassemblage is only half the story. Solve, in light components and first principles dissolved. The next step is more tricky. Coagula. There is interiority. We come back to unknowing when we rebuild or reborn anew. Fuck enlightenment. I want to become endarkened with you. All right, cheers. I will be back after the interview to share more spooky fun and to give you an update about the Green Mushroom Project. And we're going to talk a little bit about Cthulhu too and all kinds of other good stuff. So don't go anywhere. But now let's hop in for the rest of my conversation with Britt. It's interesting too, like, about freaking out. The person I mentioned, Kurt Gödel, like he died like a very broken person. He ended up basically like starving himself to death because he was so paranoid that mathematicians were trying to like kill him and poison him because he had ruined mathematics. So yeah, it's a tragic and interesting story, this person's life. But yeah,
wow, holy shit.
I like to look into the biographies of people whose like work I find really interesting, and it's a little bit disheartening, but I have to tell you, because a lot of them ended up going crazy and like dying by suicide, and like it's very sad. It suggests that there might be some kind of a price to all of it, although I'm not sure about that. It could just be that mental health care should be more accessible or something like that too. So that's another way of looking at it.
That is another way of looking at it, but the first way of looking at it is more interesting, to be honest.
And they're not mutually exclusive, right? Like, yeah. I think maybe you can say that, yes, there might be a price to like traveling outside of these like normal bounds of thought, or maybe that's where these folks already are existing in the beginning, and that's why they're able to do the work that they do. But
it takes a toll.
Yeah, and then maybe the separation, like we talked about earlier, that idea of being a social animal and being isolated and stuff. And I guess that might be its own kind of isolation, like this mm-hmm. intellectual isolation where you're thinking thoughts that you're not sure anybody else will be able to fucking understand, you know? So,
yeah, definitely. How lonely would you feel in that you can't communicate or express yourself to anyone? You feel like you're not understood by anyone. That is definitely, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. And I think that there's definitely a trend, an identifiable trend, and some of, and this is maybe this is more of like a conspiracy theory type thinking, but of the like the beautiful mind people, the like hyper intellectual people who also suffer from these mental illnesses or conditions, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, there might be something there. I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist or, but yeah, there's a saying about this, right? So it's a thing, right? Like there's a fine line between genius and madness, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think they call it success, I believe, if I remember the way that goes. So yeah, it's basically like, are you able to, you know, cause yeah, you could die completely unknown and have this amazing corpus of work that people discover hundreds of years later or something. And they're like, oh man, this person was a genius. But until that happens, you're just a crazy person who died in obscurity or whatever. So yeah, it's all these definitions are dependent on other people's contexts too. Yeah. So yeah, interesting.
Yeah. Sorry, that was a little unrelated to fear, I guess, but
no, that's
if it's like considered part of abandonment, if you feel like you're totally isolated, then okay, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to come back real quick to the beginning when we were talking about the design that Edison possibly produced, but we never found blueprints for. Are there fun conspiracy theories out there about this device? Because I feel like that's low-hanging fruit.
You know, that is not something that I researched, was if there are people that are trying to replicate it. I know that there were definitely people that were trying to debunk that as even being a thing that he would consider, because he was such a, like, scientifically driven mind. He did not want to approach things in a way that people thought would think were, like, cuckoo. He wanted to make sure that everything, and he even said this about this device, that he wanted to make sure he was using scientific methods and would achieve results and explain them in a scientific way. But he, like many other people, believe in the law of thermodynamics that states that energy cannot be created nor destroyed. It can only be transformed. So that energy still has to be out there somewhere after you die. And I think the fact that he was even willing to investigate that is pretty cool. But I do not know about any people trying to recreate it. Now, the people that have tried to recreate Tesla's ghost radio have come up with some weird sounding shit that I've heard, but I don't know if that is something they're just creating on their computer and making it seem like it's coming from this thing, because in every single one of these videos that I've seen, people have this thing hooked up to their computer. So, you know, and I don't know enough about that stuff to know if it's coming from the machine they created through the Indestructible online, or if it's coming from just something that they've patched together to make sound creepy.
Okay. Well, I'm guessing if it's something that was, you know, designed by Tesla, there might be a way of making a sort of more mechanical version of it that you didn't need a computer for.
Yeah. So another device that people did, like, try to recreate and they debunked for the most part was called the Spiracom. It was created in 1980.
Spiracom?
Yeah, the Spiracom.
That's a very 80s name.
They have an entire, and it's very 80s looking, instruction manual. It's like pages and pages long that shows you the schematics and how to create this thing, how to operate it. But it's called the Spiracom. And yeah, that one's interesting too. But that one was debunked, unfortunately. But I think the idea of creating a device that could do that is pretty cool. So
yeah, that is really fucking cool. So you had mentioned that folks around this time were converting, like, closets and stuff into these rooms. What were they called again?
A psychomantium.
Psychomantium. Okay, so yes. What do I need to do to convert my spare bathroom into a psychomantium?
Okay, so here's what you do. You paint all of the walls and the ceiling black.
Okay.
You need one place in there to sit down. Prefer
the toilet. Okay.
Yeah, there you go. You put, like, one of those, like, fluffy toilet seats on there, you know, like the old school carpeted ones. Might be better for your bum. But then you'll need a mirror that you can turn so that you can't see your own reflection, but you can still see into it. And if you want to get real fancy, you could do, like, a double mirror setup where you have one mirror on the wall above and behind your head and the other one in front of you, and you turn them both so that you can see into both of them, kind of creating that passageway, but you can't see yourself in either of them. And then you just wait and you sit in the dark and you can ask questions. You can do automatic writing because you're not going to be able to see what you're writing anyways. But yeah, it's supposed to be like a space that's very conducive to communications with outside energies.
All right. Fuck yeah. I love that. So in terms of the theory here, are we thinking that the mirror is the sort of, because sometimes mirrors are considered to be sort of like a portal of some kind. Is that what's happening with this?
Yeah, basically, like a portal that you're scrying into. It's kind of like a, I guess, a form of mirror scrying, but instead of the mirror being black, the room that you're in is black. Well, okay. I mean, I know that you can scry with a regular mirror and not just a black mirror, but yeah, I feel like the idea of black mirror scrying is a little more tantalizing than scrying with a regular mirror. But speaking of fears and whatnot, that has been something that I have always struggled with, is a fear of looking into mirrors, because I just know I'm going to see some shit I don't want to.
I actually have a little bit of a fear of mirrors too, and it comes from a hallucinogenic experience that I had when I was much younger. And yeah, there was some, yeah, it's something that I have, it's not maybe not a fear, but a respect for. It's definitely something that I have a healthy, there's something there for me, for sure.
Yeah. Ooh, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know if you're comfortable talking. I know we're at 50 minutes. I don't know if you're comfortable talking about it, but I definitely love to know more about that experience.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it was, I used to like to go to these like all night parties. I was like a raver or whatever when I was younger. And sometimes afterwards we would, you know, go and do these like little excursions while we were, you know, waiting for the drugs to wear off or what have you, you know, you know, watching the sun come up. And it, you know, usually it was really pleasant and beautiful. I grew up in Colorado where it's just gorgeous and everything. So
I love Colorado.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. So yeah, a lot of time spent, you know, and a lot of times these parties would be in more rural areas. So you'd be in this kind of like, you know, pristine environment, like watching the sun come up or something. But this was at a place called Garden of the Gods, which is a beautiful place. It was like just the crack of dawn. It was one of these experiences where the lack of sleep plus, you know, all of the activities and all of the other things that I had been doing, like it definitely really sort of blurred that barrier between like the dream and reality. I don't know if you're like a lucid dreamer, but I felt very, very strongly this sense of being in a lucid dream. You know, this comes up in so many different traditions of life, you know, the waking life being a different type of dream than the dreaming life, but then both being dreams.
Yeah.
And I really felt that in a very experiential way. It was very apparent to me, like at that moment, I remember. And I remember like stopping into the restroom and wanting to look in the mirror and stuff and getting this urge to do it and seeing like myself, but then seeing like all of these other sort of like timelines, like these other like mirror selves that were surrounding me, like this sort of like probability cloud of selves.
Mm.
And like just like seeing it there was like this really, as we were talking about earlier, like being exposed to information that your brain is sort of like not capable of parsing out very well for whatever reason, like you're some of your filters have been removed and you're just like getting more than you're used to or whatever. So yeah, it was sort of like it was like a sort of, I guess it was a little bit traumatic in a way. Like it was like this like holy fuck experience of like a little bit of my concept of self being obliterated. But yes, the mirror is still something where it's like, well, what will I see if I open my mind too far while I'm looking at this thing? So yeah.
Yeah. And do you think that, I mean, I'm personally a believer of this, but do you think that in a way that experience with whatever that substance was, the hallucinogenic, helped open you up to being sensitive to that for such a long time, like even to this day? And that's why you have that, like, you're still aware that the potential is there for you to see something?
I mean, I think every experience that we have has the potential to, like, you know, change us and everything, especially an experience that engenders awe and everything. I think that you can probably get there a lot of different ways. It's possible that, you know, for me, this was a combination of dancing all night and not eating a lot and being sleep deprived and having taken MDMA and LSD and, you know, all of the rest of it and being in the setting of this, you know, sun coming up over these like amazing rock formations and just this incredible, awesome beauty, right? Like just this really like awe-inspiring stuff. So, I mean, I think that I probably, there could have been somebody there and there were people there that hadn't taken any drugs and stuff. And like, I'm guessing that they might have had just as amazing of experiences just from the other stuff that happened too. So yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say. I think that stuff is really, it affects everybody so differently that it's, yeah, I mean, for me, I would say that maybe, I guess, like hard to say, probably, I don't know, maybe, probably. I think that like the use of psychotropics is something that's really awesome and interesting, but I do think sometimes I get the sense that maybe we might want to like have a little bit more like respect for, and sort of just like in a maybe animistic way, like the sort of like spirit of the substance itself and like, instead of treating it like a tool, maybe treating it more like an ally that does have its own kind of agency and its own kind of desires about things and should be like treated with respect and worked with rather than just used, you know, I feel.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I definitely agree there. And I think we are all guilty of that to some extent in our practice, especially if you work with nature in your practice. I do. And I don't know, it's a learning experience. Every day, trying to remember to be as respectful as possible.
Sure. And I think what I said, you could really extrapolate it out into a lot of other things. Like instead of like, you know, just using the food to get fuel, you know, you can like think about working with the food or whatever. Like, I think that that's something that, one could, if one wished, extrapolate into most areas of life and probably find a lot of benefit in doing so. But
yeah. But we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about
Oh, yeah, I know. Whatever. We're here to talk about. We're just here to talk. So I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today. I know we spoke a little bit longer than we were planning, and that's dope. I fucking, I've had so much fun hanging out. I know that we're sort of close to one another, I believe, geographically. So perhaps in the future, there could be an opportunity to do some in-person collaboration on some kind of a project or something.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Hell yeah. All right. Well, we'll have to figure out what that might look like in the future. Perhaps we could build a psychomantium and experiment with it or something.
But yes. I'm so down. I'm trying to get my boss to make one at work, but then I thought about it and I was like, no, because people are just going to be unintentionally opening shit. Too much work.
What type of work do you do?
I work at an escape room.
Very fun. Okay, well, that's a perfect place for a psychomantium.
Yeah, exactly. That was exactly my thought. And my boss was like, I'm actually okay with there being portals open. And I'm like, but are you?
But you say that now. I love this for your escape room. All right, well, fuck yeah, Everett. So people can find Primordia on most of the podcatching apps. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Do you have any other work out there that you would like to plug or anything?
Because I'm a goblin, I craft a lot, and I do make magically infused jewelry and divination items.
Ooh, goblin jewelry. I love that.
Yeah, goblin jewelry. Fun for everyone. But yeah, like pendulums and divination bowls and bone earrings and shit like that. So yeah, and that's at my Etsy shop, and I think it's under the same name, Primordia. So yeah, I'll just go ahead and plug that.
Okay, fuck yeah. Well, check out the Primordia podcast. Check out the Primordia Etsy shop for some fun, spooky shit. Britt, thank you so much for kicking it with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, fuck yeah. Thanks so much to Britt and to Flood. Don't forget to check the show notes for links to Primordia as well as to XV Planets and all of the other great Green Mushroom Podcast Network shows like Ad Hoc History, Administrism, Grognostics, and Unearthing Paranormalcy. And that, of course, was Vanilla Ice from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie again. Don't forget to check out The Spookier Side of the Mushroom, a collaboration between Britt, Flood, and my friends over at Unearthing Paranormalcy Podcast. During that collaboration, Britt mentions that she went to college in St. Augustine, Florida, because it was rumored to be a very haunted place. So I've actually visited St. Augustine, and it's a pretty neat little town with a fucking rad old fortress you can go to and tour and watch, like, historical reenactors fire cannons and shit if you're a fucking nerd for military history stuff like I am. There's also a really cool pirate museum and a nice little distillery. It's really cool. Anyway, hearing Britt talk about this place reminded me of a pretty spooky dream encounter I had while I was visiting St. Augustine. The dream scenario was that I was speaking to this really beautiful woman who I thought of as being my best friend, and she was like asking me all of these strange questions. At first, I was doing my best to answer these questions in earnest while sort of pushing to gain lucidity and control in the dream, which is something I kind of like to do anyway, but I began to feel suspicious and I realized that the person who I considered my best friend, like moments before, was a total stranger. And as this was going on, she continued to press me for information and I sort of began to intentionally like lie and mislead her with my answers and felt more and more uncomfortable. And as this was going on, I looked down at the floor, which was like polished enough to cast a reflection of the person that I was talking to. And what I saw reflected there was the face of a gray alien, you know, like the common trope that we're all familiar with by now. I decided it was time to nope out of that dream, and I attempted to wake up, which is usually actually pretty easily done for me. But in this case, I was not able to, like, pull myself away from this person who I was talking to, and it felt like they were, like, holding me in place. And so instead of trying to, like, retreat, I decided to charge instead. And as I did, I, like, made my arm into a blade and, like, ran this thing through with it. And there was this sort of, like, flash, and I woke up, and I felt pretty shaken, but there was also like this weird feeling of maybe having passed some kind of test. I don't know. It was wild stuff. We're going to be hearing a little bit more about spooky dream work in just a few minutes here. But first, let's hear from Dave Audrey from Unearthing Paranormalcy about how they like to view the concept of fear on their show. So he says, one of our podcast's overall missions is to provide knowledge and philosophy to the things that are feared. There's something about the unknown that causes people to see the worst possible things staring back. But when we engage personally in the inner work, we also find that over time, it's not scary at all. It's rather harmonious. I like to try to bring that to the Green Mushroom Podcast Network and project, helping to light the way for people to be adequately equipped to live in harmony with their inner selves. Okay, fuck yeah. Thanks so much to Dave for that. Cool shit. I love it. Shout out to the whole Unearthing Paranormalcy crew and everybody over at the Green Mushroom Project and Administrism Discord server. Stoked to have the opportunity to connect with such fun, smart, and interesting folks. Speaking of which, Rin, a member of our Discord, let me know about some dream work that she did using the Cthulhu mythos. While being familiar with dream work, this was her first experience working with the great priest of the old ones here. So this is what she says. A few weeks ago, I decided to do some dream work with Cthulhu, a being from the world of H.P. Lovecraft, who is known for contacting people through their dreams, and it's said that to look at him will drive one insane. So to do the dream work, you draw the sigil with tentacles, light a black candle, and say a summoning before immediately going to sleep. Now, I'm no stranger to bizarre dreams, but they became more frequent and way more disturbing than usual. Not particularly nightmares, but very odd horrors. For example, last night I saw myself in an odd world which was attacked by some jellyfish beast, and it is not uncommon to meet strange individuals in dreams. At first I thought it was just me, but someone I live with has experienced these strange dreams too, which confirms to me that this is no coincidence. We are also not on any new medications or other substances. Because of this, I do a banishing ASAP when I wake up and have seen all I need to see for the night. All right, very cool and spooky. Thanks so much for sharing, Ren. Okay, so I thought this would be a good time to return to the Pseudonomicon by Phil Hine to hear a little bit about what he wrote about Cthulhu. All right, the Great Cthulhu. In the mythos stories, particularly the Call of Cthulhu and the Dunwich Horror, Cthulhu is distinguished from the Great Old Ones as their high priest and their cousin, yet can he spy them only dimly. He lies in the sunken city of Ruleya, in death's dreams, until the stars are right for the old ones to reclaim the world. It is significant that the stirrings of Cthulhu send telepathic ripples around the world, bringing waves of disturbances, visions, nightmares, mental breakdowns, and causing artists to produce strange images whilst in a dreamlike state. Cthulhu is depicted as a zoomorphic form, a vast bulk which has vast wings and an octopoid head. Revelation through dreaming is a strongly recurrent theme throughout the Cthulhu mythos, and it is well known that Lovecraft gained much of his inspiration from his dreams. Cthulhu is generally understood as being the Lord of Dreams, and is entombed by the city of Ruleya in the deep ocean. He is analogous to the thonic perceptions and desires which have been sealed or become latent within the subconscious mind. Elsewhere, it has been said that we are the dreams and we shall wake them, the old ones. In these terms, Cthulhu and Ruleya are the buried link within human memory to the gnosis of the Great Old Ones. Again, the Cthulhu-Ruleya image bears all the hallmarks of an initiatory state. This particular gateway is under the deep ocean, a wild territory also under the aegis of Pan. Cthulhu-Ruleya transmit currents into humanity, and those who have heard the call are inexorably drawn into the depths. Revelation and the summons to initiation draws the would-be magicians away from the consensus reality. The deep ocean is often represented as chaos or the underworld, Amentia. This analogy is further reinforced if the sinking of Ruleya is read as a variation of the myth of the fall. The image of Cthulhu is reminiscent of many ancient god forms who have since become demonized, like Set, Medusa, Typhon, Hanuman, etc. Zoomorphic entities such as these recall the sense of participation mystique, which has been lost with the gradual development of the individual ego. Cthulhu can thus be seen as another access point into beast consciousness via the process identified by Austin Osman Sfeir as atavistic resurgence. As an extension of the above, Ruleya can be considered to be an extrusion of Cthulhu in the same way that a spider extrudes a web. Relia also partakes of a strange geometry, which when astrally explored, constantly shift and warp so that tunnels and pathways collapse and overlap with each other. This description will surely be familiar to anyone who has worked the tunnels of Set, and Relia itself can be considered to be a form of this experience. A recurring image from negotiating the paths of Relia is that they connect both the dark earth and the stars. All right, fuck yeah, I love it. Thank you so much, Phil Hine. Interesting shit there for sure. A lot to think on, and I think we'll probably be coming back to this topic at some point in the future. So I thought it would be interesting to read a little bit from Phil Hine's more recent book, Hine's Varieties, to see what he writes as he reflects back on working with Cthulhu and writing the Tsunamicon. So this is the sort of introduction to the essay Cthulhu Madness that is in Hine's Varieties. In the Tsunamicon, I was trying to convey the emotional entanglements and disorientations which, in my experience, are all too common in magical practice. Obsessions can be creative, but can all too easily tip into emotional disorientation and cause a loss of sense of self. Surfing the edge of trips to the edges of sanity can be difficult at times, yet ultimately can be immensely rewarding, provided, of course, one manages to come out the other side of the event. So awesome. Thank you so much, Phil Hine, for that. I think it's a good way of looking at all of this and a good reminder that, yes, as magicians, we are always sort of walking on a tightrope. So we'll be returning to the Cthulhu mythos in just a bit, but first I wanted to say thanks so much to everybody who participated in the Green Mushroom's second birthday celebration. Thanks so much and shout out to Miguel, Dacia, and Torin for helping out with the planning and for all of their rad contributions during the ritual. Thanks also to everybody who attended. There were quite a few more people than I was expecting, but it still felt really intimate thanks to people's respectful approach, gratitude. I will be concluding the festivities tonight with some private ritual work. I've been doing a bunch of magic lately and it's been fucking rad. I love this time of year. We're going to be doing a planetary initiation ritual for the sphere of Saturn on November 5th. Looking forward to that. Let me know if you'd like a link to our private Discord server where we will be doing that as well as holding our chats and other activities. Thanks so much to Dave from Anything Paranormalcy for leading the planetary sphere stuff. They've been really, really cool so far. We're going to be recording the next chapter of the Green Mushroom Audio Grimoire later in November, which will entail exploring a new area of our shared astral space, which I discovered last month and am stoked to explore with folks. The last time we did this was in the bonus episode between number 22 and 23 called Introduction to the Green Mushroom Shared Astral Space and Temple. So this was before I had the idea to make an audio grimoire, but I suppose that episode could be chapter zero. I don't know. Anyway, I'm excited to try the type of collaborative exploration that we did in that episode again. Much love and much love to everybody participating in the project, regardless what that looks like for you in your practice. So stoked to share the conversation that I had with Jason Miller about his new book, Consorting with Spirits. There's lots of great advice about working with entities and some different ways of thinking about how to do that. It's going to be a good one. I'm planning to release that on Hecate night. If everything goes to plan, I also hope to release my new album of weird, richly produced erotica that night as well. We will see how it goes. Shout out to Samantha Shadow. I had a lot of fun watching the Mandala catalog with y'all the other night. Thanks for the invite. And shout out to Keith Ross. Check out his new Haunt Manual series over at wethehollowed.com. Haunt on. Much love and many thanks to those of you who are supporting the show on Patreon. Don't miss the fun bonus episode with Flood, which is posted there now. If you like the show and you're into what I'm doing, you can support it on Patreon or buymeacoffee.com, or you can post about it on social media. Word of mouth is key, so you can tell your friends, lovers, enemies, and the mysterious entities that you meet in dreams about it. Good reviews and stars are also apparently really important too, so that's also a good way. I really appreciate all of you who have been doing all that. It really means a lot. Thank you. Okay, so returning to the Cthulhu mythos, I thought it would be fitting on this, the Green Mushroom's second birthday, to read from H.P. Lovecraft's book of poetry, Fungi from Yugoth. Okay, so I'm going to read Part 32, entitled Alienation. His solid flesh had never been away, for each dawn found him in his usual place, but every night his spirit loved to race through gulfs and worlds remote from common day. He had seen Yadith yet retain his mind, and come back safely from the Gorzik zone, when one night across curved space was thrown, that beckoning piping from the voids behind. He waked that morning as an older man, and nothing since has looked the same to him. Objects around float nebulous and dim, false phantom trifles of some vaster plane. His folk and friends are now an alien throng, to which he struggles vainly to belong. That's a fucking mood. Thanks, H.P. Lovecraft. Also, piping from the voids behind, hilarious. Anyway, I think that most people can kind of relate to the experience of the alienation that's talked about here, at least in one way or another. You know, beyond just the normal stuff about being human, being into weird shit or having interests in topics or experiences or whatever that others might find unusual or maybe, like, cringy or whatever, I don't know, can certainly add to this. It was partly a feeling of really needing to connect with others that led me to start podcasting and to come up with the Green Mushroom Project, or maybe to have accepted the task of creating it, unclear. Regardless, I feel really lucky and grateful for how well it's worked out and for the people who have come into my life as a result. One must find the others, as they say. It's been a lot of hard work, but totally worth it. And I've learned something important. If you're strange or unusual or atypical, or hell, even if you're not, you must be willing to create the things you need in this world because they might not exist yet. But you deserve to have what you need, so it's worth the effort. Resist the urge to settle for less than you deserve. Resist. Resist by maintaining sovereignty of the self. Resist by maintaining love of the self. Resist by maintaining fierce loyalty to love and pleasure. Resist with acts of radical kindness. Focus on the path to better times. Fuck yeah. Thanks so much to Britt and to Flood. Thank you for listening. I hope everyone is having a fun and safe spooky season. Happy Halloween. Happy birthday, Green Mushroom. This is Lexa Strata reminding you to stay strong and stay fucking curious.
Lux Occult is a part of the Green Mushroom Podcast Network.
All right, and now for a special bonus treat. Here is a spooky birthday version of the Green Mushroom Project 23 Bibliomancy track. Cheers and much love.
Green Mushroom Project 23 Bibliomancy. Read by Old
She sees nothing around her but ghost fragments of the brightness of what she has lost. I shall say that battle is found in the ghost plunder and the electronic age is
The name of the city is Spanish. biomechanics. He started to run. I don't want to know. I don't want to see. I, us, have chosen to deepen our spiritual journeys by pursuing initiatory work. I alluded earlier to the problem of speed, but this is also a problem. And the priests shall put these curses in rites, washing them off into the water. The goddess Strife is treated unjustly by the immortals, for they do not want to dwell where the eagle eyes are too deep holes with the thyroid cartilage, the rather large structure forms the rather large structure. Reiterate that they have to be understood as coming in degrees, a powerful conjuration. Powerful conjuration of the angel Zadigiel appears to the conjurer. Eloquence, most necessary to gain your ends or maintain. On the night of the dark moon, while you are sitting quietly at your dark, can you trust the silent knowing and serving others? Try to remove the suffering of other people. Wants you to dissolve the sugar, loose the cover with a lid, and set aside to create the space for the journey to occur. Our creation stories, the origin of strawberries, is important. Sky Woman's olive leaves, knowers of sacrifice, cleanse their defilements by practice. Cosinomancy, divination by a sieve, suspended on shears, transgender news, since gay and mainstream media didn't cover it, whom had long titles and honorifics, both before and the output from the AI. It's sort of a dossier. With a bag, because they're so new. Figured I'd give it up if anyone asked. Nobody said a outer planet transit that it accompanies, but the event cannot be described without stigma having abandoned his parents and his ancestors. This is preferable to an isolated existence, lonely, bounded by a high brick wall.
Hi, I'm Frater Yarmurud.
And I'm Zarina.
And we'd like to introduce you to administrism.
What is administrism?
As an occultist, for years I felt the universe directing me towards a practice that was ecologically based, with a foundation laid out by cultures untouched by the influence of what's become modern Western society. With labels like shamanism and neo-shamanism carrying too much uncomfortable post-colonial baggage, I've decided to take my own approach.
Join Yara and me as we research and develop a magical system where we recognize our place in nature with all the life that surrounds us. We want to share with you our journey into a paradigm that incorporates ritual and ecology, anthropology and metaphysics, biology, and the occult.
Using ethically sourced material, historical accounts, ethnographic records, and our own personal experience, we want to share our discoveries as we watch administrism grow in an organic blend of traditional spirituality, modern science, and a dash of homesteading, without all the connotations associated with labels like shamanism.
We hope that by listening to how administrism sprouts in us, it will plant its seeds into your own practice. This way, you can find your own balance between magic and nature.
Because the world needs room for both.
And don't forget, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
What scares you?
Ghosts? Aliens?
Monsters?
The occult? Conspiracies?
Some of you like to be scared, and unearthing paranormalcy is for you.
Some of you try everything you can to avoid it. Unearthing paranormalcy is for you.
We take the topics that scare some, and we dig in to find the source, then present the history to make the paranormal a little more normal.
We also throw in a bit of comedy to shed a light on some of the darkness in the world.
So whether you're scared of bumps in the night, what's inside your own mind, or strange lights in the sky, we cover it all.
We dig in and present all that we find and try to come up with some logical
and not so logical
reasons for the high strangeness happenings.
Sometimes we are scared of the things we don't understand, and the more we understand, the less we fear.
So find us, Unearthing Paranormalcy, on your favorite podcast app. And join us on Facebook, Instagram, and Discord at UMP Normalcy. And until next time,
keep digging.